It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Man, oh man, it has been a while. Okay, I guess we don't need to cover what's been happening the last few months. I mean, the world ended, it's on fire, there's an apocalypse, we all have to wash our hands and wear masks now and act like it's the new normal. Yeah, so that's where we've been. But we decided to pick the right time to come back. There wasn't much going on in the world of Apple, and boy howdy, did we pick the right time to do a new show.
It's the right day.
It's definitely the right day.
Yes, yes, dub dub.
Who wants to lead us off with talking about something? I mean, of course, you know, WWDC was today, kicked off. We had the big keynote, the virtual keynote, in which everything was a smooth jazz recording of Craig Federighi and his awesome hair.
Yeah, the production was over the top.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate, I don't know. It went off without a hitch, and it came in under 2 hours. That was great, but I don't know. I just like the stage show part of it. I mean, because it always amazes me how well it actually comes together on the stage for Apple and everything. And so this was just kind of like, there was no like waiting for the train wreck.
Yeah, it was a little bit overproduced. And I mean, you know what? I'm glad in the name of brevity, they covered everything they needed to get covered in a good amount of time and no pausing for applause. And
in 105 minutes.
Yeah, it was a tight presentation. I appreciated that.
I kind of like the extra production. It was over the top at points, but as somebody who's never been there, never going to go there, I really enjoyed it. I liked the fact that it was stayed snippy. There were no real slow parts. There was always information coming around. And given everything they crammed into this hour and 45 minutes, if they tried to do all of that live, it probably would have pushed 2.5 hours. I felt kind of like as we got more information, got more quality information from it. But like I said, the train wreck was always kind of a nice little, ooh, look at them kind of to get to watch everything.
Yeah, if this would have been live, we'd have had 15 minutes of people just walking on and off the stage.
And AR demos and probably a little toy demo of something. And
yeah, so who wants to lead us off with talking about iOS 14?
I love that home screen.
Well, let's get the obvious out of the way. It's awesome to come up and get caught up with Android 6.0 with the widgets. I'll go ahead and, you know, throw the joke out there for the people, but I thought the way the widgets were fantastic. I'm really excited to do that and kind of revamp my home screen and get information on there that's usable for a change, in my opinion.
You know, I've always liked the screen that has the widgets. What do they call that in iOS 13, where you can slide to the left and they had a name for that. And it's escaping me at the moment. They didn't call it the widget screen. They called it the
Today menu or the Today screen like that.
So you can arrange the widgets. And I always forget that it's there. I have that thing highly customized, all the shortcuts that I would normally use. I can hit one button and open Waze to a particular saved location without even having to go and navigate in the app. Super useful. I can summon an Uber, you know, an Uber X, and it already has in the icon how long it's supposed to take to get there. So there's a lot of neat stuff in there. I just never use it. So I'm kind of glad to see that. The widgets being adjustable so that you can move them out and back and around and make them tiny little squares or you know, big, large rectangles is going to be kind of nice, I guess. You know, a lot of the changes seem to be refinements to the home screen, which I thought was a little bit weird.
Is it Windows or is it Android? That's what I wonder.
Yeah, you can definitely do the tiled appearance, and that's you have the power to make it look a little more custom. And I guess that was something that a lot of Android users would complain about too, is everything is stock. And they do make a good point. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I have 10,000 apps, and I know that they're there, and I'll use Spotlight to search for things, but beyond the first couple, I always put the first couple of pages are the ones that I absolutely have to have, you know, in descending order of importance. And yeah, this is going to sort of flip that on its head a little bit. I'm not super excited, yeah, but it's okay. I mean,
I only keep 2 pages. So first page is, you know, mostly single apps with like a couple of folders. And the second page is like, again, like two or three, like the top row of single apps and then the whole all folders. And that's kind of how I keep it. And if you've been running, you know, iPad OS, like on the iPad, you can actually do some widgets on the home screen when it's in landscape now. And so, you know, a lot of times when I'm typing on my iPad now, I have my calendar and dark sky and I'm looking at it and like the battery levels for like everything, you know, up on my iPad screen. So in reference to iOS, the one thing I can see this doing is really driving my OCD nuts, because I'm gonna mess around with that screen.
You're gonna be dragging icons all over the place.
Oh man, just pulling this up here. No, I don't like it here. Do I like it here? Do I want to show this or do I want to show that? Yeah, it's definitely gonna be a productivity killer for me.
I think when they introduced, you know, home screen folders or whatever you want to call it, I wound up putting folders, you know, creating a folder and putting some crap in it that I either didn't use, you know, I called that I didn't use this folder or whatever, or a folder that, you know, was kind of stuff I used, but I didn't use a lot or some such, you know, just trying to organize it in some way or another. But now I have like, I don't know, 15 pages of home screen, and I just use Spotlight, you know, to find the apps that I want. And I don't really care about the organization anymore, because if I add a new app or install a new app, it's just going to stick it on the next open space except for the first home screen. And I just use Spotlight to find the apps that I have installed.
Siri suggestions work really well too, because, you know, I use Apollo for my Reddit client, and I'll notice when I go to use Spotlight to search for something, it will suggest opening up a subreddit that I go to in Apollo as just a one-click type of thing. So it's,
that's nice.
It's neat that I don't know that a lot of people use that, but the Siri suggestions, if you let it learn what you do, is pretty handy already with that. I think that probably has more utility to me than some of the things with the app library. Not that it's not a cool thing. I mean, for normal people, it'll be great.
Yeah, app library looks, I mean, the way it automatically organizes into folders so you don't have to is kind of neat. And then you can turn off the other pages. So that way that page shows up like second or third or wherever you want it. So, I mean, they actually thought about this a little bit and didn't give you this app library that you then got to scroll 8 pages to the right to get to. So, you know, I think they put a lot of thought into it. This being, you know, the first year we've got it like this, there'll obviously be some refinements, you know, after this year. But this is definitely a welcome addition. And I think we've all been clamoring for, you know, additional ways to organize the screen besides just, you know, a bunch of little bunch of icons and folders for a long time.
Having video playback and picture in picture is a very, very nice thing. They should have done this. You know, the iPad has had this since, I don't know, iOS 13, maybe 12. I mean, it's been a long time.
It's been like 9 or 10, I think, for the iPad.
Yeah, okay, maybe it was that long. They should have done this for the phone a long time ago. The YouTube is the app is the worst. Even if you pay for premium and it backgrounds, like if you go to switch to something else, I think even on the iPad it does this. It automatically puts it in the background and doesn't make it a tiny window. And it's just the worst. You know, the phone screens are big enough that I should be able to at least keep something going while I'm doing other stuff, especially since for a lot of people, the phone is a primary device.
So I watched today's keynote in picture-in-picture on my iPad. So I was eating lunch and brought my iPad out there, and I was chatting with y'all in Telegram while I had the actual keynote and audio playing and, you know, in a little window on the side. So that way I could keep chatting with y'all and, you know, just kind of have it up. And, you know, that was super, super nice. And I think being able to do that on, especially if you've got like a plus model phone with the extra big screen, being able to do the picture in picture will be nice.
My daughter's going to love the picture in picture because and my wife as well, the iPhone are their primary devices. So I can, especially my daughter, when she stays up chatting with friends at night, I could see her using the picture in picture with their iPhone a lot. And kind of like you said, Brian, I double checked, picture in picture on the iPad was released in iOS 9. So it's been around almost 5 years now.
That is incredible.
It is, and yet nowhere on iPhone. And Jim, that's my preferred way to watch college football in the fall is picture in picture on the game, Twitter on one half, and then Telegram on the other to chat with everybody.
So one of the things we're going to be able to get now is to be able to search for an emoji from the Apple keyboard, something you've been able to do on the Mac for it's rare that the Mac version of Messages, which I guess it's not really a Messages limitation, but I use Messages as the example, having the ability to search emojis on the Mac is something that I couldn't believe that we haven't had on iOS or iPadOS ever, but finally that's coming. I use Slack and Telegram so much that I find myself in messages doing the same sort of stupid shortcuts that don't work. So like in Slack or Telegram, you can do colon and then start typing an emoji description and you'll get a list of appropriate emojis that pop up. So I'll find myself in messages wanting to use an emoji and I'll start typing colon R-O-L-L. It's like, ah, crap, that doesn't work. And I have to, you know, pull up the stupid little emoji keyboard. So I hate that, but I wish they would adopt something even keyboard shortcut based to be a little better. But I'm very excited about that.
I have keyboard shortcuts appropriate, set up for emojis in chat. So basically, if I type colon parenthesis space, it'll automatically replace it with, you know, the smiley face. Or if I type a semicolon and a P, it'll do the, like, you know, blinking tongue out one. So basically, I have keyboard shortcuts set up for about 10 of them that I've just had there for years. I don't even...
On iOS?
It doesn't even, like... I guess I hadn't even thought about it till you mentioned that. But yeah, I just kind of put them in there years ago, and they're still there.
I probably should have done that. I did similar. I copied everything that I used inside of Text Expander into the keyboard shortcuts and did a lot of that. Apropos of nothing, I'm just going to tell you guys something kind of funny. The other day, I was on a conference call, and one of the things that we do is we kind of goof on anybody that shares their whole desktop. You're only supposed to share the app that you're using. And somebody got messaged inside of Slack, and they were sharing their whole desktop, and they go to read it, and it's like, oh, no. So I made a...
Oh, no. Especially these days.
Yes. So I made a shortcut. It's semicolon YI.
You there, bae?
And what it does is it sends like 2 pages of typed text, a word per line. It appears that you are sharing your screen. Don't worry. This happens to all of us. But I'm here to save you. In fact, you can thank me for this later. So it just writes all of that out. So if let's say that I'm the one that said something not good, and he's going to go look at what I said, I can go semicolon YI, and then boom, it's pushed out, you know, 2 pages. I should just make stop sharing your screen, stop sharing your screen, stop sharing your screen, stop sharing your screen for 2 pages. But
shoot a PDF to their printer, to their default printer.
It is a nice thing to be able to use the shortcuts. So back on track. Let's see. We got so much to cover. We may just do iOS, iPadOS, and watchOS tonight, depending on what we can get to. Let's see. Map's got the cycling update. I thought Jim, being the only cyclist among us, would be if Jason were here, he used to. But Jim being the only cyclist among us would be over the moon. But apparently, it's not impressive.
Well, I mean, we already had it in Google, and then they even said today that it's like only for certain cities. And I know that Dallas is like not even in probably the top 40th, like most cycle ready cities in the country. Like, even though, you know, we're a top 10 for like size of city, in Dallas, all a cycling app should say is, you know, watch your back.
Well, at least it's when we get to watchOS, I guess we could mention it then too. But there is a watchOS integration for the cycling on Maps as well, so it'll give you nice notifications and tell you when you need to pick up your bike and go upstairs and other, you know, get off your bike here, which is kind of a neat thing.
Look out for that car. You know,
that's what I need.
If they would allow Google Maps to just integrate with a watch like Apple Maps does, and as a first party citizen, that wouldn't even be a very impressive thing. Let's see. Car key. So we've known this was coming for a while, and they finally confirmed it today. But the biggest bummer about car key, which, you know, allows you to use NFC to start your car, and you can also share keys with other people that either expire or have limitations on them. The biggest disappointment about car key is that it only works with BMW right now, even though it's coming to other manufacturers next year.
BMW 5 Series. It's like literally one model, they said.
Oh, so disappointing.
Well, just like with, well, but you've got to think about when CarPlay first came out. When CarPlay first came out, you had, what, one Pioneer headset that worked with it. You had one manufacturer that it worked with, and that was it. As soon as it started coming in, people clamored for it. Then you had one major manufacturer jump in and go, yeah, we're going to add it. And, you know, Toyota coming up the rear long rant there, but I'll save everybody. Yeah, it pretty much CarPlay is in every car now. You know, kind of like what they said, 97% of all new cars have it. And I saw somebody joke on Twitter, the other 3% is Tesla. So you've got CarPlay in pretty much every car now. And the car key, I think, is going to be a way to go. I could see car manufacturers giving a little more pushback with that. But I mean, truth be told, nobody really makes money off of car keys anyway. They're expensive as all get out, but it's not really a profit center. It's one of those that it'd be wonderful to pass on to the customer. Hey, guess what? When you lose that key in your Chevy or your Toyota, it's not going to cost you $600 to get a new key made for it and reprogrammed with your fob. I don't know. As long as the security's in there with Apple handling it, I'm sure it is perfectly secure. I think the car key's exciting as all get out. I hate it's going to take 5+ years to trickle down to all major manufacturers. But again, I think it's a fantastic thing. It was one of the more exciting things I saw about, just because it's one of those Apple, it's magic kind of things. You know, the best Apple tech to me is always the ones that appear to be magic. And it's just, oh, wow, you know, that's amazing. That's kind of what the car key looks like to me.
Or frictionless, which also brings us to the next thing that was announced, which was app clips. Now this, all of us have been out and about and you want to do something and
I was impressed with this.
And you know, you don't want to have to stop and go and install an app and set up an account and do something crazy. The example they used was a perfect use case for when I ran into this last fall when I was in San Diego. And I had never, you know, Jim was scooting around Dallas all the time, but, you know, I had not had an opportunity. You know, if I'm going to downtown Atlanta, I don't really have a need to go and get, you know, a Bird or Lime or Lyft or any of those scooters. But when I was out there, it was just, you know, you're going down the boardwalk. It's just a great thing to, you know, they were everywhere. But, you know, sometimes I'd run into Bird, sometimes I'd run into Lime, sometimes I'd run into Lyft.
When you're in a town, you don't live in.
Yes, there you go. Town. Exactly. So, you know, actually, funny thing, I would have been scared out of my mind to do that if I was three sheets to the wind, because 10 miles an hour is really fast. It's a lot faster than you think it is. Maybe 8 miles an hour is the top out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It doesn't sound
especially
fast.
If you're going down hills.
There was a
I mean, if you've got to create an account in every single app, you know, in Dallas, we had the bikes first, and then we went from bikes to, you know, to scooters, and you got to create an account and got to set it all up. This looks really neat for that. I was going to go back to the key real quick. When they announced that, it made me realize that we still don't have the, whatever they're going to call it, Apple tracker device, like the NFC Apple tracker device that, you know, that was supposed to Sherlock the, what are those
tile.
Little tag tiles?
Tile.
But they still haven't announced that. Like that was like a last year thing supposedly. And they still haven't announced that. Maybe that
the
comes with hardware.
It was going to be called Apple Tags.
Yeah, we typically don't see a lot of new hardware announced at WWDC, except, you know, big platform architectures. But that also reminds me, too, that the Find My service, even though they didn't talk about it, it was on the slide, will be working with third-party hardware, too. So you'll have other manufacturers that will be able to... I mean, that's a dead giveaway that tech is coming. I mean, you know, if Apple's going to release a tracker, then chances are they're going to license that technology to other companies to be able to put into things. So let's hope that catches on. But the app clips, being able to go and say, I want to get a scooter, and it automatically does a sign in with Apple if you need one of those, so you can create an account on the fly. Or you can just go ahead and pay for what it is you're doing with Apple Pay, and you're off and running. Like, you don't have to go and download the full app. They have to be 10 megabytes or less. That's brilliant. You know, scan an NFC, you know, bump an NFC thing and it gives you the app, or you scan a QR code or whatever they're going to do. And
parking right there, parking apps. Think
about
parking apps. Every single parking lot you show up uses like a different company to do theirs. If you could just do that with parking, that would be awesome. Cause you have to pay to park everywhere in Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that would be the smart thing. So that's going to be pretty awesome.
I think the greatest thing about it is the sign in with Apple and generate the random email address and, you know, sort of shield your real email address from the dangerous internet. I think it's a great thing.
Well, and I think they also announced that if you wanted to do that, some companies would allow you to start transferring your existing account over to a sign in with Apple, which I would you know, there's several things that I was like, oh, I signed up for this thing, but now it's got sign in with Apple.
Yeah.
I'd love to just sign in with Apple and, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely something, too, that that I'm interested in. Because when they first announced that, I thought, well, this is great for new things. But what about the 10,000 accounts I already have on all these different services? I would love to consolidate. Let's see. One of the things they also didn't really give any attention to was third-party mail and browser apps can be set as the default in iOS and iPadOS 14.
Yay, what? Yay.
I missed that part. Awesome.
It wasn't announced. It was on the slide.
Okay. They said,
there's so many other things we can't get. They always, every year, they bury tons of interesting things that people have wanted. You know, they spend 10 minutes on widgets, and then they don't talk about being able to set something else. I mean, again, you're still limited on...
Well, there'll be the blog post yes. on The Verge next week about all the yes. things you missed.
Well, there's
on,
no way they were going to talk about email because of hay.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But being able to set
email, set the killer email app.
And browsers are going to be a nice thing. Of course, they all have to use the same rendering engine, but I guess being able to keep your bookmarks and history in sync across multiple devices, if, you, if you're like Jim, you just insist on using Chrome everywhere for some reason, but...
I don't use Chrome anywhere.
Do you use Edge now? Have you switched to
Edge? I use Edge now, yeah.
No, Edge
I mean,
is the
I
way
use
to
Safari,
go.
But I do use Edge for all my work stuff now. So Edge is my work browser, and Safari is my, like, you know, other browser. Everything else.
Wink, wink.
And Firefox is my other browser.
Edge wink, is my wink, work wink. Browser, and Chrome is my personal browser.
It is a way to keep things separate so that you don't accidentally open something you shouldn't.
Well, especially I have like separate like Azure Cloud accounts, and so like my own is in Safari, and then my Azure Cloud account for work for all that kind of stuff is in Edge. So
I used to do the same thing with AWS because the IAM console that you signed in with a company thing was different than the one for.
Yep.
But once you signed in with one, it seemed to only ever want to give you that as the sign-in, which was always a big pain in the butt. Let's see. The weather app. Apparently, their acquisition of Dark Sky is now complete, and they're going to be doing up to the second minute-by-minute weather, you know, telling you when rain's about to start in your area. Things that we Dark Sky users have enjoyed
That's
forever.
That's awesome. I love Dark Sky. One of the best apps in the whole store.
Up to the second. I could just imagine it's like, hey, you're about to get rained on. You're like, oh, wow. You're like, you hold your hand out, and then all of a sudden
that works for
hand.
Me quite well. Right now, sometimes if I'm not sure, I'll ask the HomePod if it's raining outside. Yes, it appears to be raining, but I still can't trust it. If I pull up Dark Sky, I know 100% that it's still raining or not still raining because I've had it be wrong before.
I may have told this story on the podcast before, but we were sitting at a nail salon getting pedicures. And I got an alert on
as you do
that it was going to rain in like 5 minutes. And I like, I looked down at the lady and I said, I need some of them flip flops that you give like when you leave. And I put the little fake disposable flip flops on and I ran outside and I put the top up on my convertible and I come back in and I sat down and no sooner than I sat down, it started pouring like crazy outside. Every one of those lady looks at me like I'm a magician. Like, they're like, how did he know that that was about to happen?
You're like my dog that can tell the thunderstorm's about to start before it happens.
It's like my bum ankle there that starts go. To swell when...
It's your bursitis?
Let's see. The, you know, a lot of things were talked about on the slides that weren't mentioned. Not a lot that we need to necessarily cover. We can save some.
Well, one thing.
Go ahead.
One thing that could be very big for folks that have not jumped into WhatsApp and Telegram is the improvements to threaded conversations in iMessage. They finally added people that do use WhatsApp or Telegram or other big chat programs like that, that you're used to being able to do at replies to specific people, to do replies to specific messages, and by name or by mention notifications are all finally coming to iMessage. It was funny. It's a running gag with some of my other friends that years ago we tried to do a group conversation in iMessage, and this one thread of seven people split into six different threads. That would be five of us in one, and then another combination of four in another, and six of us in another. And so it's a running gag every year that WWDC, hey guys, they finally fixed threaded conversations in iMessage, and we all laugh and Telegram and stay in Telegram. My daughter will find big use for that. She's in, and my son as well. Both of them have big, huge group threads, and we'll be eating dinner, and my daughter's phone is just da-ding, 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 and I told her about it tonight. Hey, you can only get notifications when somebody messages you, and she was like, oh, thank God, that's the best news I've heard from Apple in ages. So those of us that have gone third party, it's no big deal, but again, kind of like with a lot of this other stuff, just good to see them catch up with this in their main apps.
Yeah, just about every group chat I'm on is muted so that my phone and watch aren't exploding all day long with stuff that I really can just, you know, go and catch up at the end of the day unless they need me. So that's...
Yep. Mom, them tomatoes look really nice, but I don't need to hear every single person tell you that.
No comment. I know my family doesn't listen, but yeah, no comment. Let's see. Anything else we want to cover on iOS before we move on to iPadOS? Overall, I would say that iOS... there is one thing that we were going to probably save it for iPadOS, but we could probably go ahead and mention it in iOS. Phone calls won't take over your home screen on iPad or iOS when you get a call anymore. So isn't that nice? It's something you can flick away instead of just having to sit and wait until it goes away and let it go to voicemail or as you would have done.
Yes.
Yeah, I like to hit the power button twice and it goes away.
That's also changes on the Siri screen as well. Anytime you go to invoke Siri on the phone, it's just the little Siri icon at the bottom as opposed to the whole screen like on a phone call. That's you're right, I forgot about that. That's a really good increase, or really good improvement for them.
So let's talk about that for a minute. Maybe we'll get some announcement come the fall about the improvements in Siri, but good Lord, I wanted to see something. I mean, this is WWDC, so you figure that if they're going to have some under the hood changes to Siri, that we would see something a little bit better. And it was just kind of like, the UI looks new. Hey! And then they just completely move on, and that was that. And, you know, they really didn't try to toot their own horn or say, hey, we're doing great stuff. Now, when we talk about iPadOS, there were some things. Was it iPadOS or macOS? I guess it was macOS, where they did the searches now. If you use Spotlight, it'll start trying to give you recommendations. And it feels like they're kind of trying to rebuild Google from the...
They were showing that.
Okay, I knew it was either iPadOS or macOS, one or the other, where you start typing, and it was trying to start filling in intelligently a little more, including web searches that it was going to recommend. I wonder what's powering that behind the scenes. Did they make a deal with like DuckDuckGo or Bing or Google, or what are they doing to power that? Or is this something they came up with internally? I guess time will tell. But I thought it was interesting they're trying that. But man, I really wanted to hear more about Siri. Now, they said that Siri is supposed to be able to answer, I guess, a lot more, a lot of the questions. I think, like, you know, what causes seasons was one of the things that they had. Basically, though, how do you do that without relying on some sort of fax database that's, you know, where are you getting the data from?
It's your Aunt Karen updating that database on the daily.
I mean, shortcuts was a nice way to get, you know, some extra usefulness out of Siri that wasn't there before, kind of like the skills in Alexa and those types of things. But I don't know. I was underwhelmed that it's almost 9 years old and they still haven't, they weren't giving us what we needed on that we weren't getting the good stuff. Uh-oh.
It's still not as good as Amazon's Lady. I'm sorry. It's just not.
So when you say not as good as Amazon's Lady, so what is I mean, I know obviously that's true, but I want to hear your use case because you've delved more back into the Amazon ecosystem than the Siri ecosystem for your music listening. So what's up with that? What's up with that, Jim? Ooh, what's up with that?
What's up with that? We only have one HomePod and Amazon devices are cheap. And so, you know, we got them around the house. I've started invested in Hue lights and they work with both, but you know, and I can ask both, but we use those and, I'll ask, you know, for it to play something on Spotify on all my speakers, and it plays like in every room in the house. They put the HomePod equivalent of the Amazon devices on sale last week, like the really nice one with the subwoofer and all the different speakers, like basically the HomePod equivalent, expensive, really nice, spatial speaker system, but in one speaker. I almost bought one, but I was just like, it's fine. It's just because HomePods are so expensive. If I could put a HomePod in a lot of different rooms, I think I would use Siri more. But the fact that, I can throw a $25 Echo device in the bathroom and I don't have to worry about it getting wet or whatever, it's just kind of hidden behind the sink. You don't even see it. And I walk in the morning and I can say, play up first podcast. And there we go.
Some of us put elaborate shower caps on our HomePods that are in the bathroom. But it still kills me every time I look at that thing. But the HomePod does the same thing. I mean, sometimes this is going to sound, first world is all get out, but I'll be playing a podcast as I'm getting ready in the master bathroom, and I'll go ahead and send the output to both the master bathroom and the one on the main floor. And that way, as I leave the master bathroom and head down to the main floor, it's just a seamless, it's playing everywhere. And then I'll do the same thing and say, start it in my office. And keep it playing on the main floor as I walk down. So it's kind of a seamless type of thing. But I don't know. I figure with the audio quality just being kind of crappy, and you being a big music guy, that just that little tiny terrible speaker on the Echo Dots would be something that just sort of gnawed at you.
Yeah. Well, the Echo. I don't know what it's called. The Video 5 or I don't know. I've got a pair of studio monitors plugged into that one in the bedroom, so it sounds really good. And then in the living room, Megan had like one of the original like nice Echo device, like the really, has a good sound to it. Not like the super nice like a HomePod, but still, pretty decent one. And so we've got that one in the living room, and everywhere else we just have the Dots. Oh, and I've got the old video one in the kitchen, which actually works really well in the kitchen because you can ask it for recipe stuff and whatever, and you've got a screen and it actually like shows you stuff and pops it on the screen. So that's really handy in the kitchen. So, I mean, I'm using them, would I not like to see that like these things are talking to Amazon thousands of times a day on my pie hole? Yes, I would not like to see that. But, it's like I'm just learning to ignore it. It's Amazon. At least it's not Google. It's not Facebook.
And Jim's got a pair of JBLs hooked up to every Echo in the house. So, he doesn't have the sound quality.
I got a subwoofer box in my bedroom hooked up on that.
Exactly. He doesn't have the poor sound quality on every Echo.
Well, to Brian's point with that too, I've actually moved my HomePod back to the office just because I never used it at the house, and I'll use it a lot more at work. But one of the things here is I figured out that it's got radio stations. Hey, great. So I just sell it, hey, Apple in a can. Play K-Love Radio. And so far in the last 2 weeks, 60% of the time, it works every time. The other 40% of the time, it grabs, it tries to play some song that says something about K-Love or Love in the title from an artist I've never heard of before. Yes, I'm Southern. Yes, I slur my words. Yes, I'm hard to understand sometimes. But it's 60% success rate for me saying the exact same phrase, the exact same words every single time. It's unacceptable for what, a $300 device? And then you combine that with the fact that, yes, an Echo Dot, the speaker in it compared to a HomePod, you can't. It's like comparing a Corolla to a Lamborghini. But the difference is for that Lamborghini price, I can outfit the whole house with Corollas. And yeah, the music, you could, to Jim's credit, and as far as music for, I don't even know what HomePods are going for these days.
And all the Corollas.
Exactly. For $300.
You can get them for $200 frequently at Best Buy. Like every month and a half they offer them for
$200. Yeah.
So that's why I have three.
So you get a Lamborghini for $100,000 instead of.
Well, I mean, if you got the same quality from Google or Amazon, it would be the same, you know, roughly the same price. So it's, you know, it's not that bad. I mean, you are getting better quality. The thing with the music, the Siri thing is still a problem because, you know, I'll have my my phone and I'll say, send my wife a text message, and it knows who she is. I'll tell that to my HomePod and it goes, I don't know who your wife is. It's like, how do you not know when this is all stored in iCloud? These are all based off the same right. the same thing. That's the sort of thing that gets me. That's the bad part of this. But
well, to your credit, Brian, you talked about Siri suggestions earlier on the phone. All right. I do wear my Apple Watch at night for sleep tracking through AutoSleep. And AutoSleep is buried in a folder somewhere. And I look at it often enough that when I swipe down to get to Spotlight, AutoSleep is the number one Siri suggestion when I wake up in the morning. Between 6 and 8 a.m., it's always the first suggestion there. How is it that this system can be smart enough to know that that's, you know, that that's an app I'm going to get to, but it doesn't know the people that I text all the time? You know, that's just... It's absolutely mind-boggling how these systems, learning systems, can be so intelligent in some areas and absolutely asinine in others.
Truly. Let's see. So iPad OS, any of you guys want to kick off some of the things and talk about that? Since being a primitive iPad user, I can't take advantage of it. Well, I'm sure I could. But anyway, I'll defer to one of you guys. Let's get into
the pen. They fixed the pen.
Pencil. Yeah, pencil. It's not Microsoft. Yeah. It's a pencil.
Y'all know I like pens, not pencils. So, yeah, they finally
so talk about the handwriting recognition.
So you can actually, write in blanks, and you can, you know, take some notes, and it'll kind of transcribe them for you into type text. So it actually makes it, you know, a little more useful. I've never been one that could take notes on my iPad because I just don't want to go back and read my scratch on the screen like that, you know. And so they've kind of improved your ability to go back and edit and look at that kind of stuff.
You can also go through and it looks, I'm assuming all these are pencil kit upgrades. You can cut and paste. You can actually select some of your writing and it'll select it in smart blocks. It'll select the different words from each other. And then you can cut and paste them as the writings, or it'll convert it to text for you if you want to drop it into Word or something else. If you open up, say, the Reminders app, you can scribble while you have the pencil in hand. You can scribble a new reminder deal and it'll automatically convert to text for you. You can do the same thing in Safari. The way they explained it, and it's something that I never really thought about doing, is how when you're writing notes with the pencil, it's great, but as soon as you want to try to do something else on the iPad, you have to put the pencil down and either bring up the keyboard or start touching around on it to do something else. And being able just to kind of write instead of type, okay, I'm glad whoever the demo person was had pretty decent handwriting, I can't wait for my chicken scratch to attempt to be deciphered. It's going to be fantastic. I don't quite have doctor's penmanship, but it's very close.
You'll be having to write in giant block.
Right, I'm back on my kindergarten primer
block letters
primer stuff to write. And it also had what you've seen in some of the things like Linea Sketch and other things where it's smart objects. If you try to draw, say, a hexagon and you hold and press, it makes it into a neat hexagon. Looks like they've added that stuff into Base Pencil Kit. One of the interesting things for me is most of your note writing apps, like Notability, Goodreads, and things of that nature, I think I understand them to have their own native writing engines for everything. It's going to be interesting to see how long it takes the big players to convert over to Pencil Kit. Again, I'm assuming all this stuff's in Pencil Kit. I'm assuming it's going to be natively turned on. You just drop Pencil Kit into your app and it just works in iOS 4 or iPad OS 14. But it's going to be very interesting to me to see if the big players will move their native engine kits over to Pencil Kit and they'll ditch what they've done.
So what about the widgets? What's changed with widgets?
Pretty much everything that was in iOS 14, you know, again, I think even on the iPad, currently when in 13, you can, on the first home screen only, you can shrink the icons to the right and you can kind of keep the little today thing on the left at all times. I do that on mine with my 13-inch iPad, or 12.9, pardon me. But being able to drop and drag widgets and use them all through the iPad, I think that's going to be even more useful on the iPad than it will be on the iPhone. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I use it on my 11 and love it. And, you know, and you basically right now you just get that today view, whatever you have in there shows up on the left-hand side and you get smaller icons, which makes sense on the iPad because you remember how like there's huge icons on an iPad screen. Just, you know, it looks odd, especially on the 12.9. I mean, it's bad enough on the 11, but so yeah, I think being able to customize the home screen on the iPad will be even more so than the iPhone because, you know, I can see myself only keeping just a couple of icons there because you're able to put a whole lot more into the dock on the iPad. So you can keep the stuff that you really want down there and, you know, putting, you know, having a big Fantastical block on my home screen and a big dark sky or, you know, I guess it's just going to be a weather block now, right? Maybe we won't even have dark sky. It'll just be weather. And then,
yeah, dark sky is going away.
So, you know, and then, you know, who knows what else? Maybe I'll have a Telegram block. I don't know, you know?
Well, and actually something that just hit my mind, you know, this is kind of a throwback to Panic's old app status board that you had on the iPad way back when. Could people foresee people using the widgets on an iPad home screen to do true multitasking, you know, kind of like what you just said, Jim. Okay, I've got a Fantastical thing up here. And I've got a Telegram widget over here with a chat window in it. And here's my OmniFocus task list over here. And here's a dark sky thing. So in theory, you could have 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 different apps that you're interacting with all at once. And a lot better than the 3 you can do right now.
Maybe they'll let you drag and drop content.
I was about to say, it's a lot to ask for.
That's crazy talk.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Let's see. Was the sidebar, the rumblings of the three-pane view. Do you want to talk about that, Josh?
Yeah, it was one thing I was catching up on Twitter as I had chance to during the day. I think it was either underscore David Smith or Steve Trouton Smith that was talking about that. Just some of the – a lot of the complaints you hear from developers is how Catalyst stuff just does not look very Mac-like. And I think bringing in some of the three-pane stuff, some of your more traditional Mac UI kit things is my, from what I understand, I'm not a developer, but that's one of the things they're trying to bring into iPad OS to make your Catalyst apps feel more at home on a Mac. So maybe that's a sign that Catalyst is kind of maturing. But that there's also stuff we'll talk about with Mac OS, with the iOS and iPad OS natively running on the new ARM Macs that, you know, maybe that's not even going to matter.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, talking about the Catalyst stuff, we can save that till we get to the Mac piece. But I will say that one of the things that is really an annoyance is having something that was a completely native iOS app that gets ported via Catalyst, like Twitter on the Mac is done as a Catalyst app, and you get like the share sheet button, but there is no share sheet in Mac OS, so it does nothing. Or the fact that News has been one of the most famous Catalyst apps, right? It's been there from the beginning. There's nothing, again, no share sheet inside of Mac OS. So if I see a story that's interesting, I want to share it with you guys. I have no way to do that. But I can do it from iOS, no problem, or iPad OS, but no way to do it from Mac OS, which is also another major annoyance. I hope they get a lot of those dumb things ironed out. Overall, iOS and iPad OS didn't feel like a huge upgrade as years passed. I think we've finally gotten to the point now where we're just in the refinements phase of the OS. I mean, overall, since, you know, they are basically, I mean, they are different, but they're still pretty much the same. What are your overall impressions of iOS and iPad OS 14 before we move on to, you know, watchOS and tvOS?
Well, a lot of that's going to depend on how buggy 14 ends up being. A lot of people have talked about the TikTok cycle and, you know, that last year was a slew of big, huge things that, so many things packed into iOS 13. And iOS 13 was also one of the buggier point releases and just overall that, you know, we've seen in a while on iOS, if not ever. Some big stuff in 14, yes, some stuff I'm really looking forward to. But on the whole, it was not just a huge bunch of breaking, you know, oh my gosh, this is earth shattering. And I don't think that's a bad thing. In this day and age, you can't pull a Snow Leopard and say, you know, no new releases. We're strictly just bug fixing. I think they did it with, what, 12? Was it iOS 12 they did that with, or 11?
Yes, it was the stability release, kind of.
Yeah. You know, and so seeing another semi-stability release, I'm not upset about that at all. But the pencil kit stuff's huge. The widgets are fantastic. And just a lot of quality of life improvements, which me at this point, I'm fine with quality of life improvements.
And if they start doing things like with the iPad this year, we got the mouse support kind of midway through the year. So if they start doing some of that midway through the year changes, you know, I think that's good. I think the updates to music, which we really didn't talk about, were nice. The home screen improvements obviously are the big, you know, showstopper here that most people will notice. And I don't think that's that hard. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like that's something that would be that hard to implement. You know, just basically changing the springboard, you know, to have, you know, some of the widgets on it instead of just some icons. So, you know, hopefully, you know, they can make those small changes and stabilize everything else.
I mean, I'm pretty excited about all the new stuff. I would like to see some more stability out of the gate. You know, like Josh said, 13 seemed like a point release where they were trying to maybe fix things, but at the same time, you know, introduce new things like Jim was talking about the mouse stuff. I'm not overly hopeful. I hate to say that, but I'm not overly hopeful. You know, we saw a lot of good come out of, say, iOS 10, 11, and 12, and then 13 was sort of a disappointment in. We didn't see new stuff, and they're just kind of covering their bases, if you will. It's like, hey, here's some new stuff, but it's not really new stuff, etc. And I hate to say that, you know, 14 may be the same thing. You know, maybe a few UI changes as far as, like, you know, folders or widgets, but, you know, we don't see any real functional, you know, changes or, you know, updates or additions.
I think we could all agree that iOS 14.2 is going to be awesome.
And we'll all be forced to install it day one because we'll have our new iPhones then, and, you know, it won't be an option to not do it, which is going to kind of stink.
14.9.3 is going to be amazing.
It'll be the best. So before we get into watchOS, I do want to cover a couple of the simple things that won't take up a lot of time, is the HomeKit integrations, which are, you know, maybe I'm the only one that those are really exciting to. But something I've noticed is when they were making the announcements today, particularly with the camera stuff. So with the camera stuff, you guys may not have been overly impressed. Like, oh, I can do zones in a camera, or, you know, it has some facial recognition. The facial recognition, I think, is pretty cool because, again, Apple did go into a whole spiel on privacy and why it's important. A lot of the functionality that they're introducing already exist in individual devices. So, like, in my Ring doorbell, I can go in and define zones. I've done that, like, the first time you get it, saying, only look for motion that happens here. On my Amazon cameras, I can say, look for things that are human-related, so my dog won't set off the someone's in your office type of situation. So they've had these in other devices for years, but what's sort of nice about this is if you haven't been using this or you haven't been really paying attention, Apple is basically, with HomeKit and cameras, developing the capability of being the OS for all of these devices. I'll give you an example. I have a Logitech Circle 2 that I got in 2018. Great camera, right? It comes with all the Logitech stuff. You know, if you've been buying Logitech devices for a while, you know they like to stick proprietary crap and, you know, their own stuff on there, and it, you know, the UI is not consistent with anything else you use, so on and so forth. Well, midway through the release cycle, or toward the end of the release cycle for that particular camera, they gave you the option to go fully HomeKit. And when you go fully HomeKit, it's not like supporting AirPlay or something where, hey, this is a
you
layer.
You never go fully HomeKit.
You never go fully HomeKit. When you go fully HomeKit, though, it takes over the camera completely. It no longer checks in with Logitech. You have to use the Home app to apply any firmware updates, which are now automatic, by the way. You don't even get a choice in, you know, holding off. It automatically updates it. Everything is managed through the Home app, and it's a completely Apple camera. It's you basically, if you want to go and put the Logitech stuff back on it, you have to contact support, and it's a whole thing to actually go, a whole process.
Oh, wow.
To do it. So HomeKit takes over that device and it becomes basically, think of it like this is an Apple OS running on a third party piece of hardware. Even though they're not pushing it as such and it wouldn't seem as such, trust me, it is absolutely 100%. It's a Logitech, it has a Logitech logo on it, but it's an Apple camera now. And because of all the security, because I wondered how they would do that, right? It's promising all this security. How do they deliver it? Well, basically, they divorced themselves of it. The new version of this camera, this Logitech camera, Circle camera, the successor, is HomeKit only. There is no Logitech OS on it anymore. It is purely a HomeKit device. And, of course, I got to pick myself up one of those pretty soon. But I thought that was kind of neat. So when I saw those things today about the defining zones and the facial recognition and all that good stuff, it's further in that direction. I don't know how many hardware vendors are going to be okay with ceding that to Apple, but you think it would be a big burden off of like, all I got to do is build kick-ass hardware and Apple's, I'll build it to their specs and then their software can run on top of it. I don't care. I got paid for the hardware. They can maintain the software. We're all good. So hopefully that will be a thing. One of the things that I liked about this, though, which is long overdue, is one of the areas that I think Apple has fallen down on in the last few years is the, you know, we've all heard and people will mock it. It just works. It all works together. It just works. One of the things of having that combined ecosystem is being able to do something like we saw today. Like if I'm watching something on my Apple TV, which is most of the time, and somebody comes and rings my doorbell, I want that to appear on my Apple TV and say, hey, this person's at your doorbell. And since it has facial recognition and you have contact pictures for your contacts, oh, by the way, you know, your brother is at your door, your sister is at your door, whatever, that person is at your door and it can interrupt your Apple TV with a live feed showing you what's going on. That is phenomenal. That is some, you know, interconnected ecosystem goodness that we've been missing for the longest time. So that I'm really
excited. Harkens back to like back when people had landlines and satellite TV and, you know, a DVR and the phone would ring and it would show, at least show the
caller ID,
the caller ID on the screen. I mean, that was awesome. And, you know, to like reach up, hit pause and answer the phone, you know, I mean, that's that kind of integration is the kind that, you know, quote, we all need, quote. I mean, it's that kind of thing that everybody wants that.
It's not just integration for integration's sake. It's actually doing something useful with that and saying, you know, if I'm watching my Apple TV, then show me. Or having the HomePod, as it said, your sister is at the door, your brother is at the door. You know, those types of announcements are, that's huge.
Well, and that kind of stuff is extremely neat, but there is a slight problem with that. The HomeKit Secure Video was as well adopted as the smart connector on the back of the iPads. You had the Logitech Circle camera, and it was when HomeKit Secure Video released announced last year. And I think in the last 12 months, you've had the Logitech Circle, and that's it. There's been no other devices, I think, that are currently shipping still that support Home Secure Video. Now, Eufy has got a very cheap camera that's coming out next month, I believe, that I'm extremely interested in because I'm like, hey, I can afford that. I'll invest in that. But again, that makes Eufy the number two vendor, the second vendor after Logitech. There's just the problem with a lot of this HomeKit Secure Video stuff. Nobody's adopting the technology, and I don't know why. I don't know what the problem is with that.
I think it will start to catch on over time. Remember, they said today that they open sourced HomeKit. There was a time where you had to have a stringent hardware standard to do HomeKit like cameras and whatnot. And they wouldn't allow wireless cameras specifically. You had to have a fixed power source, for example, for some reason. You know, so they've relaxed a few of those. Now, those of us that have Rings devices can use the HomeBridge software running on a Raspberry Pi, like I do. And then all of your Ring devices become Home devices. So I look forward to being able to use my Ring doorbell on Apple TV with the with that, you know, tvOS 14. But I think it will catch on because you used to have a chip or something in a lot of those devices, but they had some really stringent standards. I think they realized that wasn't going to work, and that's why you're seeing more of this. Eufy makes great stuff at a low cost. Aren't they like an Anker offshoot or something? So
yes, they are.
Yeah, it's so their home brand.
To have them in your corner, I mean, the Logitech stuff is really pricey. I mean, for a camera, a single standalone Circle 2 is $180 most of the time. That's retail. You can maybe get it on sale for $140 back when they still had it. But that was ridiculous. That was really high. My Amazon cameras, I have four of those, and those are like $60 a piece. Well, they're $120 if you don't get them on Prime Day or whatever. But, you know, you can get cheaper hardware that does a lot of the same thing. So they've had to compete on that front, and, you know, it's long overdue.
We need to bring, you know, up Amazon here, because, I mean, I can come back to my computer here and open up Amazon, and it's like, hey, I just overheard you and your wife talking about wanting a freezer. Do you want me to search for freezers for you? So there.
And you say that like it's a good thing? Also, Ring...
I'm joking.
Okay, good. Ring also wanting to share your camera feeds with cops is kind of a... like, hang on, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Again, that goes back to that cheap stuff. If, you know, you're being monetized off of, you know, hey, this Echo Dot is really cheap, but we're gonna data mine the hell out of you.
Why the Kindle Fire quote with ads is, you know, $100, and then the one without is, you know, $180. It's all about what kind of information you're wanting to
exactly
sell.
Which, I mean, that's fine if it's, you know, if that's what you want. But, you know, they haven't had a lot of good HomeKit doorbells has been the problem. Otherwise, I recently upgraded the Ring 2 to the Ring 3, and it's still not that great. But I would have done a native HomeKit doorbell. I think they're starting to roll out now, Arlo and a few of the others. But, you know, give me that stuff, and I will use it as an option. I'll do the 2 terabyte, you know, iCloud drive plan if I have to. Just like, give me something where I can do this, because I'd like to have it all in one place. I'd love to ditch my Amazon cameras. Love to ditch them. Ring included, because Ring kind of stinks. But can't do it until there's more vendors. So trust me, I feel that pain more than anything. So my favorite announcement that came out today was one that I was actually surprised I even said anything about. It was the AirPod OS, well, not AirPod OS, the AirPod firmware update that's going to bring spatial audio to the AirPod Pros. So when I'm around the house, I have my AirPods in most of the time, and not the Pros, just the regular AirPods most of the time, because I love being able to tap them and make them do stuff instead of having to squeeze. So I feel like I'm on Star Trek with a communicator or something. You're like, did it send a text? I know you can use your voice to that, but invoking Siri with a double tap or hanging up a phone call with a double tap is still kind of a useful feature to me. So I most of the time I'm using those. But the announcement that AirPod Pros were going to have support for Dolby Atmos 7.1, 5.1, and the way that they're pulling that off with the... I didn't realize, I guess it makes sense that they have the accelerometers in the AirPods Pro. So when you turn your head or you move the iPad, the sound comes appropriately. So if you're watching a screen and somebody's talking and you turn your head and glance at your watch and then come back, they're going to know that and adjust the audio on the fly. That is huge. A lot of times I'll watch stuff in my basement on my big TV just because I want to have it in Atmos, just because I want to have it in that 7.1 simulated surround on the Sony soundbar that Jim and I both have. And being able to do that on the AirPods is going to be sort of a mind bender. I can watch anything in my house now with an Apple TV, which is every TV, and have it with the Dolby surround. That's going to be freaking cool. I mean, that's... Are you not entertained, everyone else? Is that not awesome?
Extremely.
No. I think Atmos, you know, level headphones that are basically your consumer level, you know, AirPods is pretty amazing. And I almost bought some AirPod Pros this afternoon. Like, I was ready to click it. I mean, they're like $30 cheaper on Amazon today. I don't know if that was because of the announcement or what, but...
I use mine quite a bit with the TV because whatever the reason in the new condo here, where the bass is downstairs, it just echoes perfectly upstairs. So if I'm watching anything that where the TV is up at all, you can hear it very easily upstairs. Just the bass, not the treble. And so I'll put in my AirPods to watch like late, you know, when I'm up by myself watching late TV. And so that's going to be really nice, you know, to be able to have that.
And also, I think I heard that they're setting up audio sharing with the AirPods on an Apple TV. So say ourselves and the missus could watch at the same time with our respective AirPod Pro sets.
That would never happen to me because my wife will not watch anything that I watch. So she'll never want to hear the audio. We were just watching on the...
this show sucks.
Pretty much. So that's kind of neat. Let's see.
Also on the AirPod updates too, it's now going to seamlessly switch between your devices. So, for instance, if you're watching a movie on your iPad and then you get a phone call on the iPhone, it's going to swap over automatically to your other device for you.
Finally, that is a big all caps finally exclamation point. This is something that has really irritated me since the winter of 2016 when these were first introduced. That it didn't already do this it's mind boggling because that is the worst.
That's kind of huge. I hadn't really thought about that, but that's kind of huge.
I mean, that's a use case that bites me all the time. I'll be listening to something on my iPad. My iPhone. I'll sit down. You know, if my wife's at work and I want to eat some lunch really quick and I'll watch something on my iPad and I want to just transfer the audio over, well, then I go to settings, I go to Bluetooth, got to say connect.
And hope it stays connected and doesn't bounce back to the other one on you.
Right.
That is the worst. So that'll be a nice thing. While we're doing the cleanup on HomeKit and AirPods and those types of things, They did confirm in a slide, in that slide of things we can't talk about today, is HomePod will be definitely getting third-party music support. What exactly that means, we don't know, but I'm guessing, big guess, that you'll be able to set a default music provider so you won't have to say play song X on Spotify. If you have Spotify set as your preferred music player, it'll just know and go. So that'll hopefully stave off some of that antitrust that keeps brewing about.
I was just about to say, that's the antitrust feature.
You know, they really need to do that anyway, just because there's no reason not to. I mean, Amazon does it. I think Google does it, I think, where you can set an alternate music provider. So it's, you know, it may not be so bad now.
Well, it's just like the old, the thing with Apple is that they've always reportedly been the best. So if you're the best, what do you have to worry about? If you truly think that Apple Music is that much better than Spotify or Pandora or what Tidal or any of these other ones, put your money where your mouth is and just allow that to happen.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. You've made your money off the hardware. That's and if you build a superior product or you entice people, you know, if they do that rumored Prime-like subscription where you can get everything for a fixed price, They can offer support for anything, and it still wouldn't be a problem. Let's see. Was there anything else on the AirPod OS or HomeKit? I think that's pretty much it. We're right at about an hour right now, so this is probably a good stopping point. I know we didn't get to watchOS, but watchOS and Mac and whatnot. You guys want to aim for the next show, which should just be in a day or two? Let's do that. So... good stopping point, and until the next part two of this this two-parter, hopefully just two-parter, maybe not three-parter, we'll see. Wrap up, I guess that's a later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.